What does it mean to live in a world tearing itself apart? In 1775, London and Paris stood as twin reflections of dysfunction, both magnificent and rotting from within. England's king and queen ruled with large jaws and plain faces, while France's monarchs bore large jaws and fair faces. This mockingly similar description reveals a shared blindness. Both regimes convinced themselves things were settled forever, even as warning signs flashed everywhere. London streets crawled with armed robbers who terrorized even the Lord Mayor in broad daylight. Paris aristocrats required three servants just to prepare morning chocolate, one to pour, one to stir, one to present. Meanwhile, a nobleman's carriage struck and killed a child, and the Marquis tossed a gold coin as compensation for the inconvenience before driving away. A woman stood watching, knitting silently, her eyes never leaving him. Her name was Madame Defarge, and she was recording everything. This wasn't just inequality, it was a powder keg awaiting a spark. Dr. Alexandra Manette emerged from the Bastille after 18 years as a ghost, white-haired, broken, reduced to mechanically making shoes. He had forgotten even his own name, responding only to 105 North Tower, his cell number. His daughter Lucy found him this way, and with her golden thread of devotion, slowly wove him back into life. He established a medical practice in London, earning respect for his scientific knowledge. Yet he kept that old shoemaker's bench, and when stress overwhelmed him, he reverted, pacing his room at night as if still imprisoned, hands working with dreadful skill at cobbling. After Lucy's wedding, he suffered a complete regression lasting 9 days. His resurrection was never complete. Trauma shadowed him always. Yet his journey from living death to renewed purpose embodied hope that even the most damaged soul might find restoration through love. Charles Darnay stood trial for treason in London's Old Bailey, the crowd showing ogreish interest in his potential execution. The case turned when his defense revealed Sidney Carton, a dissolute lawyer, bore a striking resemblance to the accused, undermining witness identification. These identical men established a crucial doppelganger motif. Darnay possessed principle and purpose. Carton described himself as a disappointed drudge who cared for no man on earth. He worked as Stryver's jackal, performing the real intellectual labor while his colleague reclined like a lion. Late nights found Carton laboring over documents in solitary misery, towels soaked in cold water wrapped around his head. Yet beneath his cynical exterior burned profound love. Confessing his feelings to Lucy while acknowledging his unworthiness, he admitted she had kindled him, heap of ashes that I am, into fire. His words proved prophetic. There is a man who would give his life to keep a life you love beside you. Their physical resemblance suggested identity isn't fixed, that transformation remains possible even for the most fallen. Revolution erupted with the Bastille's fall after 4 fierce hours. Defarge discovered AM scratched in 105 North Cower, evidence of Dr. Manette's imprisonment. Outside, Saint Antoine demanded the governor's head. Madame Defarge placed her foot upon his neck and hewed off his head. This transformation showed how oppression breeds its own brutal mirror. The revolution spread like wildfire. 4 figures converged on the Marquise's chateau, setting it ablaze. Within 100 miles, officials hung from street lamps. The wine shop became revolutionary headquarters, where Madame Defarge presided. Before her sat defaced coins, as much defaced and beaten out of their original impress as the small coinage of humanity from whose ragged pockets they had come. Even the Carmagnol dance transformed into something ghastly as dancers spun, clutched, and struck at one another, a terrible sight of warped humanity. At the revolution center stood Madame Defarge, whose knitting encoded names of the condemned. She embodied justified grievance transformed into implacable hatred, a tigress carrying pistol and dagger. It would be easier for the weakest poltroon that lives to erase himself from existence, she declared, than to erase one letter of his name or crimes from the knitted register of Madame Defarge. Her fury stemmed from personal tragedy. That sister of the mortally wounded boy was my sister. That husband was my sister's husband. That unborn child was their child. Her vengeance consumed the entire Evremonde line, including Darnay, despite his rejection of his heritage. When her husband mentioned the Marquis's compassionate wife, she retorted, "Tell the wind and fire where to stop, not me." Her death came not from aristocratic enemies, but in struggle with Mispras, love's protection triumphing over hatred's destruction when the pistol discharged. Sidney Carton's transformation from cynical drunkard to sacrificial hero completed the novel's exploration of resurrection. Having lived a wasted life, he found redemption in giving it meaning. His plan unfolded with precision, drugging Darnay unconscious and exchanging places with him in the cell. A young seamstress recognized the substitution, asking to hold his hand for courage, a moment of human connection that affirmed his sacrifice's value. As Carton approached the guillotine, the words, "I am the resurrection and the life," echoed in his mind. Walking by the river earlier, he had watched an eddy turning purposelessly until absorbed by the stream. Like me, he thought. Now his purposeless life found meaning in its end. His final imagined thoughts transcended circumstances. "It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known." Through sacrifice, the dissolute lawyer achieved a nobility that eluded him in life, his wasted existence redeemed through one selfless act. Throughout the story, Lucy listened to echoing footsteps of years, a metaphor for time's march and revolution's approaching storm. These footsteps began gently, growing increasingly ominous. When Lucy's young son died uttering, "I am called and I must go," the echoes transformed, blending with the rustling of an angel's wings. As revolution erupted, distant sounds became an awful sound, as of a great storm in France with a dreadful sea rising. The novel's final image returns to these footsteps, transformed through Carton's sacrifice. His prophetic vision presents a beautiful city rising from ashes, the Darnay family finding peace, their son named Sidney becoming a famous man in France. This transformation reflects the central theme: individual acts of love and sacrifice possess power to redeem even the darkest historical circumstances. While hatred drove Madame Defarge's methodical vengeance, love motivated Carton's ultimate sacrifice. The golden thread of human connection proved ultimately stronger than the knitted register of condemnation. In a world perpetually torn between its best and worst impulses, redemption remains possible, even at life's end. A single act of selfless love can transform a wasted life into something profound that resonates through generations.